All right, welcome back to the Weekend Warrior Podcast. This is episode 27. As always, we are presented by WTP Sports, We the People Sports. And as a matter of fact, this week, we are without my trusty co-host, Mike, and we are joined by the president of WTP Sports, Joe Scotch, and the editor-in-chief of We the People Sports, Gabrielle Starr. So welcome, guys. Appreciate you guys coming on the show. Should be fun. So, yeah, Gabrielle, I believe on Twitter, right? You're at GF star one, and the star is two R's, of course.
Yeah, two R's.
Two R's. And then Joe is at WTP Scotch, like the drink, right?
Like the drink.
Like the yes. drink. Easy, right? So we got that going for us. So, so let's get into it. And, yeah, all right, let's get into it. All right, so if you follow Gabrielle on Twitter, which if you don't, you should. But if you follow her on Twitter, you should know that she's a ridiculously big Red Sox fan and hates basically every other sport imaginable other than Red Sox.
Hates so we a very had to strong talk word. Some... I just don't understand them or care.
Okay, you don't understand them, right? I will not make a girl joke, I promise. So, but
it's wise of you.
You're right.
It wouldn't end well.
See, It's true. We're very girl-friendly. Women, not girl-friendly. We're very female friendly. I shouldn't say girlfriend. Very female friendly on the Weekend Warrior podcast here. So, but we got to talk some Red Sox here. We haven't talked about it yet. Alex Cora, new manager of the Red Sox. Pretty exciting, I think. He's the guy that pretty much everybody wanted. So I think it works out at least for the casual fan. At least it works out. Whether it will work out in real life or not, who knows. But he was the guy that everyone seemed to have wanted on the team.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm pretty happy about it. Out of all the candidates, he was clearly both, like, from a popular opinion and also just, like, from a practical standpoint, he was the direction the team should be going in. He's young. He's young enough that there are players that are older than him. Like, Ichiro is 2 years older than him. You've got players, like veterans on the team, like Pedroia, who actually played with him. And then you've got young guys like Devers and Benintendi who will be able to relate to him a lot better than they ever could relate to, you know, Farrell, who I don't even think spoke Spanish. Devers uses a translator exclusively. You know, it's just like the right move when you have a team with a majority of your lineup that are younger and need someone that they can actually connect with, who's actually going to talk to them, communicate with them. And Farrell's old guard, which, you know, his time's kind of passed, in my opinion. You need young blood for a young team.
It's true. I mean, the only thing that I'm concerned about, I should say, is that I think the only team to win a championship with a first-year manager was the 0-1 Diamondbacks, I believe. And so, you know, that's the only time it's ever happened. No, not the first year in the job, first year ever managing.
Like first team managing.
Exactly.
I mean, it's true. You've got a lot of managers like Joe Torre, like the famous example of a manager who did a lot better his second time around managing a team than he ever did in his first. But I mean, you also can't just hire someone like Gardenhire who looks like Father Christmas to manage a team of guys who are mostly under the age of 30. Like, it's not going to work. It didn't work with Farrell. If you cut and paste a new guy who's almost a carbon copy of the old guy, and it's not going to do anything different. But I also think we need new players on this team, because it's not like Cora is going to magically fix the fact that most of our lineup declined from 2016.
That's true. That's certainly true. I mean, they do have a whole new coaching staff, so maybe the hitting coach will be different. You know, I don't know if Chili Davis is doing something different last year than he had been in previous years, but, you know, maybe that will help a little bit. I'm honestly ready to move on from Bogarts. I'm ready to kind of let that guy go. He was very highly regarded. Everyone said he's going to be the next big thing. He's going to be Nomar and hit 30 home runs a season.
Yeah, he was supposed to.
He hits 300 a year, but he sacrificed his power for average. And I just, you know, I mean, I get it, but at the same time, I don't love it. So
I mean, none of these coaches are magically going to turn a team that finishes dead last in home runs into like a team of David Ortiz's. It's not going to happen. Like,
no, that's the GM's job, not the coach.
No. Yeah, but you also can't assume that if Dombrowski goes out and gets like someone like, you know, Stanton, who it's interesting, I'm kind of seeing the tide turning, people saying they don't want Stanton. Like, having one guy like Stanton on the team isn't going to magically fix them either. Like, they tried it with Pablo Sandoval. They tried it with Carl Crawford. They tried it with Adrian Gonzalez. They give all of these guys like 5-7 year, you know, $100 million contracts. The guys come here and they suck. And they don't make anyone else better. You know, you're trying to replicate the David Ortiz, you know, DH who like mentors everyone and magically like, you know, brings everyone up. It doesn't work because David Ortiz wasn't a big bat when he came here. He was a nobody who got released from his team. He got paid $1.25 million in 2004 and magically like he was a diamond in the rough. You can't replicate that with a guy like Stanton. And Stanton's just going to either intimidate the rest of the team or he's going to come here and he's going to suck too. The guy's been injured 1,000 times. So then you're going to end up, you're going to go over the luxury cap. You're going to be screwed and your team's going to suck again. And then the person who's going to get fired this time is going to be Dombrowski. Because that'll be 3 years in a row that he goes out, gives someone a massive contract, and the guy comes here and totally flops.
Okay, but it's Mike Stanton. Like, or it's not Mike Stanton anymore. It's Giancarlo Stanton. Like, the guy is a fucking monster.
Giancarlo Stanton's been injured, like, you know, three seasons out of the last six.
There's no chance that you bring Stanton in and his home run numbers don't improve the team. Overall numbers. We're not going to say leadership. We're not going to say, like, the entire lineup. No, he's not going to make other people better. But if you want to talk home run numbers, I mean, the dude's going to drop bombs, and he's going to drop a lot of them, especially at Fenway. So if you're looking to boost the number of home runs, I don't think that that's the way to go. I don't think the way that – I mean, yeah, if you're looking to win games, you want to boost the number of home runs. But if you fill a lineup – with a bunch of guys who are just going to drop singles in all day and push guys across the plate, I don't care if that's the way you do it or if home runs are the way you do it. But the way that they're lining their team up right now is they got a bunch of guys who can hit the ball off the wall. I don't mind that. I mean, yeah, entertainment-wise, you want to see balls fly out all day long, but you don't need to see that necessarily. As long as they're pushing guys across the plate, that's all I care about. So if they wanted to go out and get three guys who can do that are above average instead of getting Stanton, who just drops whatever number of home runs he's going to do at Fenway, that works for me too. I don't need to see them go out and just get Stanton, stick him in the middle of the lineup and hope that he's David Ortiz.
Yeah, but I think, see, this is what you guys aren't taking into consideration. It's not, you know, not that he makes people better, but like what you have to understand is that when you have a guy in the middle of your lineup that's that good of a hitter, that is just an absolute monster that pitchers do not want to pitch to, he makes other people better because they understand that their guy is behind them. Okay, if I make it out here, Stanton's behind me. He's not gonna make it out. Or if I don't, you know, push these guys across, Stanton's gonna push these guys across. And so I'm not pressing as hard. When you don't have that guy in the middle of your lineup, it makes the rest of your team not as good. I mean,
Yeah, there's no contest. You're absolutely correct in that. Like, if I'm a pitcher and I'm standing on the mound and I say, okay, this is how I break it down. I'm like, okay, you know, in the lineup, you have three or four guys where you're like, all right, these guys can hit the ball. You're going at them different than you would anybody else. So if you're going to go at, you're not going to go at, let's say, Mookie Betts or.
So it took you the second there because nobody hits.
Yeah, pretty much. So you're not going to go at, let's say, Jackie Bradley the same way that you would go to Giancarlo Stanton. It's not going to happen. So, as a pitcher, you're like, shit, I have to build my the way I pitch around Giancarlo Stanton. So you're right. If you stick him in the middle of the lineup, it's absolutely going to make a difference. But what I'm saying is that are you willing to pay whatever's left on his contract for a guy to stick in the middle of the lineup, or are you willing to throw some guys in there who can just get the job done at an above average level? I'm just speaking from money. Personally, I'd love to see him come in, but I'd also love to see Mike Trout come in. That's not going to happen. But
the other thing with Stanton, he's been talking about this Mike Trout thing for literally like a month and a half. It's like a thing with him.
Yeah, I love Mike Trout.
How could you not?
The other problem with Stanton, though, is Stanton currently is an outfielder. And so, if you're paying
him, he's not going to the DH role.
No, but that's the point. You're paying him a ridiculous amount of money, and he's DHing, and then
who said he's DHing?
He said on Kimmel, he's like, oh, I would love to be DH. He went on Kimmel, and Kimmel was like, yeah, well, the Red Sox are interested, and he's like, I could be DH. That was his soundbite.
He's working half of the. He's working 20 hours for full-time pay at that point.
But then you're paying him this insane amount, and you're giving up most likely Benintendi, maybe Devers. Like, the amount of stuff that you're going to give up for him, and then he's going to, like, it just doesn't seem worth it to me
One of the Sox outfielders is gone in the next 2 years. If you had to pick one that's going, who would it be?
Bradley.
100%. It's not even close.
Absolutely.
Because the amazing catches don't make up for everything else.
So Bradley's gone. You move, let's say Mookie to center fielder. Right. Mookie to center.
Right.
Now you got right field. You can stick Stanton in right field.
Right.
He's not a liability. He's not defensively Jackie Bradley. But
you don't have a DH.
Either you put him in left and you put Benintendi in right. I mean, either way.
Because Hanley's 33 years old and can't even – move. So,
like, yeah, worry about that when it comes to it, though. I mean,
it should have come to it now.
We were really spoiled with David Ortiz being on DH because the guy was too fat to actually play the field. Right. So he was just good enough to hit, and he did a good job at it.
You got to remember too, when we're talking about the luxury tax, David Price is gone after this year, right? He's here this year. He's opting out. There's no way he's staying here.
We destroyed him.
He's not going to have.
We greedy littled the crap out of David Price.
Right. So he's done. He's out of here. So that's a big – that's a good chunk of your salary cap that's gone. That's not salary cap. But it's a good chunk of your payroll that's gone. And so you have money to kind of go out there and get someone else if you want it. I mean, you're going to have to trade a few guys here and there. I think Bogarts has to go. Bogarts, I believe, has Boris as an agent. So you got to get him the hell out of here before – he's asking for $200 million. JD Martinez is doing right now.
If Xander Bogaerts gets $200 million, I will jump naked into the Charles River in January because that's just insane.
Xander Bogaerts is terrible.
Now, listen, you got to take pitches or it never happens. I mean, that's just
he was batting like 104 at one point during this season. Like, I just honestly don't understand how it's even the conversation. Like, Stanton or not, I want to see some changes on this team because basically all they did this last offseason was they got Chris Sale and they did nothing to plug the gaping wound that was the absence of David Ortiz. And that's fine because they didn't really know like what it was going to look like. They're like, oh yeah, well, we have like Mookie Betts and we have Jackie Bradley and we have Xander Bogaerts and like it's going to be fine because they're all these really young, talented guys. And then what happens? They all got worse. Like, Mookie Betts led this team in home runs with 24 home runs.
Call me crazy on this, but I think that we're missing less David Ortiz and more last year of David Ortiz because David Ortiz was always consistent over his career, but he was never as phenomenal as he was in those last like 2 years that we had him. That was incredible what he did in this last couple of years.
2013 was not 2 years ago, right?
I said in the last 2 years we had him.
It wasn't 3 years ago last year either.
Well, but the point, I mean, I understand the point you're making. I mean, we're missing Ortiz, but I think to me it's on Dombrowski. Like, you look at it and just say, well, you had Encarnacion, he was out there, he was sitting on the market, no one signed him. Like, you could have had him for pretty cheap money.
And how's he doing right now?
Stupid.
Or how did he do? What kind of season?
He had a pretty good season.
Was it a David Ortiz season?
There's no such thing as a David Ortiz season.
Right. Exactly. So my point is we're missing less of a David Ortiz in our lineup and more of just a competent hitter.
No, but it's both because you have someone like David Ortiz who can hit, but you also have the persona of David Ortiz, the guy who's like mentoring these players, like advising these players, inspiring these, like these are guys who like grew up watching David Ortiz.
You can't, and they come here and then like that.
I know, I'm just saying, like, you had a double factor situation here of Dombrowski being like, okay, so I'm going to lose like my power hitter and I'm going to lose the guy that inspires all the young people and I'm going to leave them with old man Farrell. And he did nothing on either point, on either side. He's like, I didn't find anyone to mentor the team and I didn't find anyone to hit.
Right.
He did nothing.
All right. So here's what I see from that. When you have, I still think the biggest mistake this team made was not getting John Lester for multiple reasons. One of them being to fill that leadership role. Now, what I was going to say before about Ortiz is that he was brought up in the culture that is Boston baseball. Okay. You can't go out and get some random guy, old or young, and say, you're going to come in and you're going to be the guy who's going to be rejuvenating this team and you're going to be the leader of this team. That's not going to happen. Ortiz was only what he was because he had been here for so long. John Lester is the same case, except they pissed on John Lester and told him to fucking take a hike for no reason. And then he ended up signing for less money. So Dombrowski can honestly fuck off, in my opinion. I hate Dombrowski.
That wasn't a Dombrowski deal. That was Larry Lucchino. But I understand your point.
It's
I mean,
the
that's,
entire thing. It's just, everybody.
No, it's the thing of guys who get it brought up in the Boston culture, like Lester and Ortiz, who want to be here, who will take pay cuts to be here, and then get told to fuck off. You read Poppy's book, and he's like, every year I had other teams coming to me with like more money, and I go to the Red Sox, and they try and like stiff me. And this is like him, you know, in 2013, batting over 700 in the World Series, and they're like, "Yo, we don't want to give you more than $10 million a year." Are you fucking kidding me? The guy just took the entire city on his back, and you don't want to give him more than $10 million a year? But you're going to give Pablo Sandoval $95 million?
We're talking about the team that takes their season ticket holders and shoves them out into the bleachers in the worst possible seats for the playoffs because they want to make more money on each ticket. Okay. This front office, not the front office, I'll say the ownership of this team is the worst in American sports, okay? I hate them so much. I hate every single one of them.
Bud, you're going to make it really hard for me to get press passes if you talk like this.
That's strong words, my friend. I think there's some Knicks and Redskins and Mets.
Yankees?
Not Yankees.
Just on virtue of the fact that they're Yankees.
None of these ownerships are treating their fan bases like shit.
Bro, the Knicks are the worst. The Knicks is the worst owner in the history of sports. It's not even close.
We had the ownership of the Red Sox is in.
By the way, can we just say that before this ownership took over, we hadn't won a World Series in 80 something years?
When they took over, it was 85 or 84 years.
Talking about how they were and how they made the team. They made the team better. They made the culture of baseball really
made the park better.
They revived it here. What I'm saying is that they don't give their fans shit. That's how I see an ownership. I mean, you want an ownership to go out and do what Bob Kraft did and have success, but Bob Kraft has also had he's done a really good job of including fans. He's done a great job.
Wrong. As a Patriot season ticket holder, I get zero from the Patriots. Nothing. I get like season tickets. We have like a few events that I get to go to that are paid that we can go to if we want to. But like, that's it. I'm not getting anything. Like, we're not, you know, so when you sit there and talk about like, I just think it's
Patriots
not about the fans.
Patriots are a lot more sought after than Red Sox season tickets.
But it's also only 8 games as compared to 82. Like, That's what I'm saying.
But they can do that in the NFL. What I'm saying for that is that they provided all of Patriot Place. They gave Patriots fans the ability to come in and enjoy the area without having to do anything. He livened businesses up. The city of Foxborough is alive because of Bob Kraft.
That's true. Yeah. The Patriots are in Foxborough because of Bob Kraft. He is probably the single most influential owner in the history of Boston sports, Auerbach wasn't an owner, but maybe the single most influential person in the history of Boston sports, period, maybe even more than Red Auerbach, which is saying a lot. But
it is saying a lot, but you're right, because think about it. Every time I drive down, let's say I see a surgeon that has an office right there at Patriot Place, and you drive down there on any given Tuesday, it's dead. Everything is dead. Those little bars, those little wing shops at places like that, they survive solely off of the Patriots season.
Right.
That's it.
Oh, sure.
They survive on Sundays. And Bob Kraft what I'm saying about the ownership here is Bob Kraft did this, built Patriot Place. He built and revived this entire area. Yeah, he obviously makes a lot of money off it.
But he could have built it in Boston, and he didn't.
Exactly. He could have built it in Boston. He could have built it anywhere else in the frigging country.
Yeah, but that's not fair to the Red Sox ownership. What the hell are they going to do? And look at Fenway.
They were going to tear down Fenway in the late 90s, and people were like going to freaking overthrow the entire state.
Right. And they didn't. They prevented
that
from happening.
And they didn't. And they came in and they – I mean, if you think about it, like, yes, there are some things that I take issue with this ownership. But if you think about the fact that they came in and renovated the entire ballpark – and, you know, unveiled these plans to make it bigger, make it safer, make it so that more – I mean, I was at Dodger Stadium last week, and that place has a capacity of almost 60,000 people. Fenway's capacity is like 37. There are people and we have actual fans. Like, I see people in Red Sox hats out here. People here don't even give a fuck about the Dodgers. And, like, you have people that would die to go to Fenway Park. You've got the ownership did this whole thing where they give college students $9 tickets. Like, my sister took me to games I went to, like, 25 more games this year than I ever have because my sister got college prices. And we sat in, like, the third, you know, in the third baseline, 20 rows back for $9 each.
Yeah,
like, they're not perfect.
No, but, they're not perfect,
but they're doing things that other ballparks aren't doing.
As a season ticket holder, I would have liked to have a coat of paint thrown on our seats maybe once in the last 8 years. And that I'm not even lying. It's like a running joke.
I told you they're adding new seats every year.
But
last year, they're working from the bottom up. I told you this. They put red seats in. The red seats are going farther and farther up, and the blue seats are getting taken out.
Yes, but we've been waiting for this forever. It's not something that's just – I mean, we've been season ticket holders, I think my – 98 maybe or something. No, it was earlier than that. They might be 96. So 1996 to now, we have not had a coat of paint on our blue seats at Fenway Park.
History, buddy.
I mean, part of that, I was going to say part of that is a little bit of the charm.
If you want to go to Yankee Stadium and sit in a seat of gold, then do that.
I have learned to love it. But what I'm saying is that these guys are taking our money every single year and not doing shit with it. I would have liked my money to maybe pay John Lester to come back instead of fucking David Price.
Well, and again, that's Lucchino, and that's why Lucchino doesn't run baseball hops anymore because of that decision. I mean, it's really that simple with him. So
it's just everything about it. This team aggravates me so much, and I hate to take it out on the players because I'll write them stuff during the year. I'll do all this other stuff, and even like. I mean, the only guy I genuinely hate on this team is David Price. Right. But outside of that, everybody's a likable guy.
Yeah. You know what? I would agree with that except for I don't dislike Hanley, but he frustrates the crap out of me.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like everybody.
Because here's the thing. If I went into WTP, into my author archives right now, and like did like an advanced search for the word weird and the word inconsistent – it would come up in almost every article I wrote this summer because that team was ridiculous. Like they would either not score a run for 7 games or they'd score 15 runs in 1 game. And you have someone like Hanley Ramirez who, you know, we talk about someone like Lester, someone like Poppy being like a Boston, kind of like a Boston cultivated figure where he like came here as nothing. And, you know, Poppy had Veritek and Pedro kind of making him into this guy. Poppy tried to do the same thing for Hanley and it kind of worked a little bit. Like he got a tiny bit better and then he totally regressed. And I'm like, you know what? I didn't expect anyone to come into the DH position and like it would have been insane for anyone to be like, oh, Hanley Ramirez is the next David Ortiz. Get your brain checked if that's what you thought before this season. But for him to be batting low 100s and have more players stranded on base and he had RBIs by September.
Yeah.
And you're the fucking DH? No, you're gone. You're 33 years old. You're injured half the season. You only hit when you want to hit. And you're like the leader. You're like the next David Ortiz. You're nothing. You don't even deserve to be on this team, let alone to be the next David Ortiz.
Yeah.
And he had David Ortiz mentoring him. Do you know how many young players would give their left nut to be mentored by David Ortiz and he hits under 150 in September?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's, again, it's Hanley.
It's baseball, though.
I mean, that's Hanley. That's what you're going to get from Hanley.
And that's the problem with this team is there was no fire in this team.
Right. Well, you know,
like,
again,
you have them playing. Like, Joe and I sat at a game for 19 innings and no one did a thing. And that was one of, and I ran, right, ironically, that was one of Hanley's two walk-offs the entire season. It wasn't a homer, though. It was just a hit.
Yeah, but I mean, he had two walk-offs. Like, that's probably more than most guys in the league. Like,
in 2004, David Ortiz hit walk-offs in 4 and 5
ALCS
games. Okay,
now wait a second. It's David Ortiz. Listen.
I'm just saying, you just said what the players need. I'm saying the guy he followed hit back-to-back homers.
This is the problem, okay? This is the problem that Patriots have, right? You're going to compare every quarterback in the league to Tom Brady. It's not fair. It's just not fair. He's the greatest that's ever done it. You can't compare Hanley to David
Ortiz. I'm not comparing him now. I'm just coming back to what you said by just saying, like, FYI, like, you say, oh, no one hits, but, like, walk-offs.
What I'm saying is this year, what I'm saying is if you look up the stats this year, I would be surprised if there was anybody in the league that had more than, say, 4 or 5 walk-offs. Because it's hard to do. First of all, you get 81 shots at it, and you have to win and be losing or tied in the ninth inning. It's just like it doesn't happen.
Which might come down to like a third of the games, if it even is that. Right. And at a third of those games, now you have to put 9 guys in the lineup.
I mean, most teams –
and hope it's right. You that gets up at the end of it.
Most teams have maybe 10 to 12 walk-offs a season. Maybe.
Listen, baseball is such – it's such an amazing game, but it's such a weird game because – I mean, a lifetime 300 hitter can make it into the Hall of Fame. That's 3 out of 10. I mean, right. You fail 7 times, you're a Hall of Famer.
Right.
So
I mean, it's yeah. There's
you,
a
you go to this and you say, okay, David Ortiz was above like there's an average. Let's say it's 300. I mean, a guy that's hitting just below that average is still doing well.
Yeah.
So you can't ask a guy to go out and hit a walk off every other night or do stuff like that. It's just incredible stuff. Now, I think that's different from football because in football, if Tom Brady completes under 30% of his passes, 60. That's not
under 30, no, under 60%.
What I'm saying, is for baseball. So if you went by the same standards,
I see
for
what
baseball,
you're saying. Right. You'd exactly. be the worst quarterback of all time.
Exactly. So That's what I'm saying. Baseball is such a weird sport where the margin for error is so large.
Right. No, well, that's true.
Different model. No, I mean, the thing with Hanley is just like, you know, you expected because you knew he wouldn't be David Ortiz, the bar was kind of almost automatically lower for him than like any basic designated hitter. Because it's like you already were like, we know we're going to be disappointed.
Right.
Well, and then he just disappointed us like even worse. And I was like, this is just, you know, like you're not like, I don't even think you're trying.
That's going to be our first year without Tom Brady too. We're going to be
right.
That's not going to happen. We'll be dead by then. You'll be fine.
I agree. No, I agree. I'm talking about like my grandchildren, but they're going to be very disappointed when they see Tom Brady finally retires and the next kid comes in and he's like a normal quarterback and we're like, right. what is this?
Well,
what
you also have to, I mean, shit. To me at least, it's not so much on the players as it is on the GM, right? The GM is the guy that's supposed to replace the players and those players can make the team better. This team, I'm sorry, but this team was not, you know, they probably finished right around where they should have. That's who they are. And you can't blame a team for being who they are because that's just who they are. Like Hanley is not supposed to be the leader, the best hitter on the team. That's just not who he is.
I think
if you try to make Hanley that, then you're not going to, that's not going to happen. And so it's not going to be successful. And so to me, it goes more to the general manager and the organization than it does the players.
And the manager.
You expect it too much. Well, and the manager too, for sure.
Because like you have Farrell with the whole thing of like the Price Eckersley thing, for example, where he, like, to this day, no one has apologized for that situation. It's been, like, 3 months. No one ever apologized. Farrell was like, I just want to leave it. It's like, okay, well, now we know that your Price is bitch.
Right. Like, well, not only that, but the players were on Price's side. That's the biggest issue.
Yeah, that was the issue.
You got Pedroia, who's the most senior member of the team, like, laughing and, like, egging it on. I'm like, it's just such a bad look.
Well, it started. I mean, I'm ready. I'm ready for Pedroia to get the fuck out of here. I mean,
yeah, I'm like, dude, you had the same surgery. You had a worse, a more serious version of the surgery you had last October. Again this year, you're done.
Right. Well,
he was on the DL for like 30 days collectively.
Right, but not the leader that we thought he was.
No, and the thing that happened with Machado at the beginning of the year was disgusting. It was just awful. Yeah. You can't do that, especially as a leader. That set the tone for the season, I thought.
I thought that was one of, and I said it from day one. I lost respect for Pedroia after he went out there and threw his guy out to be eaten by the wolves. That was horrible.
He did like a he Mufasa'd his own team player.
Yeah, pretty much. It was. I mean, that's ridiculous. If you want to come out like these guys all have each other's numbers.
It's like 2012 all over again.
These guys all have each other's phone numbers. So Pedroia could have very well, after the game, shot him a text, be like, "Yo, just so you know, like I didn't come in to tell him to drill you."
Right.
Now, I'm still one of those guys that, and I know I can almost tell you for a certain fact, there's no way that Barnes threw that ball at his head. No way that he intentionally headhunted him on that play. Right. There's none. You know, when you're a pitcher, you know that's not, you stay away from that. You stay away from the head.
Yeah.
There's one scenario where I can see a pitcher doing that, and that's if somebody did something personally, like the last time he was up, he threw a bat at you or something.
Right.
But that wasn't warranted. It's pitchers are meant to throw to this tiny little box. Okay. That's what they're throwing. So you tell a pitcher now to throw outside that box and throw at a person nonetheless. They're going to be letting that ball go everywhere. You're nervous. I mean, even the toughest guys in the game are going to be nervous. You go back to the day of the Powerball day where Pedro or Nolan Ryan was throwing, that's a different case. These guys were throwing at people all the time. They didn't give a shit.
Right.
Matt Barnes out of the bullpen, young kid. I mean, he's terrified. Come on. He's just trying to make his mark on the team or whatever. But back to what you were saying, for Pedroia, a guy of – much more maturity, let's say.
34.
Yeah, what's 34 years old to come out and throw his guy under the bus?
Yeah.
I went to opening day, and it was my first opening. It was a crazy year for me. My first opening day, my first World Series game, like my first ALDS game. I sat on opening day. The first article I ever wrote about baseball in like 4 years. I sat on opening day, five rows behind the Sox dugout. It's like the most beautiful day. I'm so happy. And I'm like, everything feels weird. And I turn to my mentor, who is like president of the Paw Sox, executive vice president of the Red Sox. I look at him, I'm like, Charles, I feel like this is weird. I was like, something feels really off. And he just turns and he looks at me and he goes, it's a team without David Ortiz. And that was day one of the season. And it only got worse from there. I'm like, you have players like getting in fights. You have players with PR issues. You've got, you know, Farrell fucking with the bullpen. The whole thing was just like, it's like, you know, that everything needs to change. And I'm just hoping that, you know, unlike last year, Dombrowski doesn't just say, okay, so like the only thing we're going to do is we're going to like insert one big expensive guy into you did it 2 years in a row. And we finished out of the ALDS twice. Yeah. And I know, like, everyone who says, okay, you know, we really want, you know, like half of the MLB would love to even get to the ALDS. Fine. This is Boston. We're not the rest of the MLB. You know, you've got some teams that the expectation is if you get to the postseason, you actually deserve to be there. And when I wrote an article this summer saying that the Red Sox didn't deserve to be in the postseason, I got so much shit for it. I looked at it again like a month ago when we got, you know, kicked out of the ALDS. Everything I wrote was correct. I was just 2 months ahead of everybody else, but I was right. I was like, they're not consistent. They're not, you know, fired up. They're not passionate. They're not doing it. And they're not going to win. I was like, if we got to the postseason, we wouldn't succeed.
Right.
And it was true. The same way me saying a Farrell should be fired was true in July. And it's true. Like, you need new stuff. And that's why I'm excited for Cora, because Cora is young enough that he's going to be able to connect with these young players. But hopefully he will also be able to deal with a brand new, like he'll hope not completely brand new, but hopefully he'll get a new crop that he can make his own, because it's a lot easier to build a new team than it is to rehab a team that's had a crap past couple seasons, you know? And if you remember, 2015 and 2014 weren't good years. You know, we all like I kind of think of it as like 2013, and then it's like I don't really remember what happened after that because it's like, you know, you watch the games, but we didn't do anything. So it's like 13 and then 16, 17.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like Farrell didn't. Anyone could have won 2013. Yeah, my grandmother could have coached them to 2013.
I don't think that John Farrell was too necessarily blamed for this. I think we had a team of a bunch of crybabies, and I think that that came back to bite Farrell. And unfortunately, Farrell, who was actually a really good guy, ended up taking the brunt of it. Because right.
And he lost the room. I mean, that's what happened. Is he just lost the room?
I don't think he's a bad guy. If you make a bunch of bad decisions over and over again, you know, that's pathological. That's not a mistake. Like if you fuck with your bullpen 5 games in a row and the result is the same exact kind of loss.
Yeah, but when everybody in the clubhouse has no confidence in you anyway, your decision making is going to be thrown off a little bit too. This isn't as much about his decision making as it is. He was being blamed for constantly losing games. Now, I can understand if he doesn't pinch run somebody or if he pinch runs somebody here and there, I can maybe count on five times that he might have cost the Red Sox a win, genuinely cost the Red Sox a win. That doesn't count for every other loss. That's on the team.
Four of the ALDS. When you lose
a clubhouse in the MLB, that's not the coach. That's the players. Do you think Terry Francona lost his clubhouse with people in there drinking beer and eating chicken during the game? I don't. I think the players became big crybabies. They became exactly what like the seniors in a college room would be like, except the coach would snap them back into place real quick. I think that a manager...
Yeah, once your players won't play for you, you're done.
That's what I'm saying. It's the players... You can't manage a bunch of adults like that. It's not how it is. These guys are making more than he is. The boss is making less than the players.
Well, of course. I mean, you know, but that's not – the salary doesn't necessarily dictate that.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. You want to inside the clubhouse. We started this year when everybody backed – in the everybody with the Red Sox backed David Price.
Right.
The inmates are running the asylum at Fenway Park.
The asylum, not the prison. Let's make sure we get that one right. So,
even though they make the mean the same thing,
anyways, the point is, I think so. Let's move on. There are two more baseball things I want to talk about. By the way, that's more Red Sox than we've probably ever talked collectively through the first 26 episodes. So,
what did you expect to happen, Pat? Though, let's be honest.
I know. That's why I said I knew it was going to happen. I did just want to say, I just want to mention quickly, Daniel Flores, 17-year-old catcher for the Red Sox, passed away. Pretty terrible, but I had a random question, and I think it's kind of weird, but what they said is that it was complications due to cancer treatment.
He went in the hospital like a week or so ago with severe back pain and was diagnosed with late-stage pancreatic cancer, like very suddenly after like, I mean, he was only signed in July, and he had like a $3.1 million contract, like was already like going to be one of the top 5 prospects next year. And he just, they like, you know, late stage, they just start you like the second they diagnose you. And it was just like, apparently it was just too much.
That's crazy.
That happens a lot. Cause they want to flood your body with these chemicals. The thing is, you're basically poisoning your body to get rid of the poison that your body has manifested from nowhere.
Right.
So you're trying, like, basically your body's like, okay, so either the cancer is going to win or the cancer treatment's going to win. But either way, your body is filled with a foreign agent that shouldn't be there.
No,
and that's what happened. It was horrible. And, you know, it's just heartbreaking because he was 17.
Yeah. It's like unbelievable.
A baby.
Yeah. Pretty terrible. So, anyways, awful news, obviously. And then the last thing I wanted to talk about was the Roy Halladay situation. You know, obviously it's a terrible situation. You know, people around Boston, obviously, and I guess went national too. The whole Felber thing. Joe, you
now
and I went
national
back.
National now.
You and I went back and forth on Twitter a little bit about it. You know, I think the way that he approached it, he crossed the line. He went over the line. You know, saying that he
can't even see the line
for the wall and like, what the fuck are you talking about, guy? However,
making fun, like mimicking Halliday's voice, being like, oh, I'm not. The man's been dead less than 24 hours.
Well, see, I think some of it was I will say some of it was taken out of context where he was talking about himself as well. and kind of putting him, like, if he was doing something stupid, then, because he said he went, like, helicopter skiing once. And he's like, if I do that, then, yeah, tell me, like, I fucking deserve to die. Like, that's the way, you know, and whatever. And so, like, look, it's terrible.
Fine, Felger, you deserve to die. The guy who's currently deceased, whose family is mourning him, does not need to hear you saying horrible stuff when he's been dead less than a day.
And I agree with that, and that's my point, is that, you know, he went over the line. He portrayed it incredibly stupidly. However, I do think that we take these guys and we put them on a pedestal, right?
Did you quote my article just then? Because that's exactly what I said.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, we deify these guys and we put them on pedestals, and when they fall,
great minds think alike.
You know, yeah.
Well, the best example that I have is Jose Fernandez. I mean, so Jose Fernandez, obviously a terrible situation. You know, dies last year in a boating accident and whatever, it was awful. And you know, Marlins built a statue for him out front of Marlins Park. Well, the guy was totally shit faced, driving his boat at like 90 miles an hour and crashed into the jetty. Like, it's just like, well, okay, clearly it's terrible that he died. He was like 22, was awful, you know, but
pregnant girlfriend.
Right. But it's like, Jesus Christ. Like, can we say like this guy was selfish for like getting shit faced and getting on a boat and dying? Like, it's like one of those things, you know? And I think so. I can't remember the name of the, of the Cowboys D lineman who got drunk and killed his teammate. He ended up going to jail. I can't remember his name, but they were saying afterwards, they were talking about it, they said, look, you know, the guy got in a drunk driving accident, but it's not an accident. You know, if you get behind the wheel of a car drunk, it's not an accident. What you do is your responsibility. It is no longer an accident because you took that accident out of your hands. So don't sit there and say it was an accident. What do you say?
I said because you get in the car, you're driving.
Right.
You don't drive, there's no car accident.
Right. Well, car accidents are car accidents. But when you shit-face behind the wheel of a car, it's not an accident. You've now put yourself in a situation where you're incredibly likely to kill yourself or somebody else. That's just a fact. So it's just, you know, if you're going to do something like that, if something like that happens to you, it's not an accident anymore. You know, and so I think the Halliday thing's a little bit different. He wasn't drunk. He wasn't on drugs. As far as we know, I would assume he isn't.
He had his pilot's license. I mean, it's like, you know, right. it's not like he just was like some rich guy who like bought an airplane and then just like was like, oh, I'm going to see how this works.
Right.
But at the same time, I mean, the thing is you've got people who do these kinds of things every day, but because they're not celebrities, no one comments on it.
Right.
And all of a sudden, because this is a guy who, you know, has been in the public eye for decades, we all think we have a right to discuss it and like dissect it and kind of comment on it. And my thing is, you know, a person is dead. Above all, you have a man who is a father and a brother, sibling, like a, you know, a husband, a friend, a teammate who died. And it's horrible. And the guy was 40 years old. And so, you know, if you want to say, okay, maybe you shouldn't have been flying a plane. First of all, you can table that statement for after the man's been buried and mourned by his family. You also right. can say it in a way that doesn't make you sound like a complete uneducated piece of shit. I mean, my God, the guy was dead for less than 24 hours and Mike Felger is calling him a moron for hundreds of thousands of people to hear.
Right.
That is just disgusting.
So for anybody who wasn't listening, or who didn't see it on Twitter anyway, I used an analogy earlier of doing donuts in a parking lot in a car and then having an accident doing that. So I got not an argument, but a heated debate at dinner tonight with my dad about it. My dad was saying the same thing. They said he was thrill seeking, and well, he shouldn't, if you don't put yourself in harm's way, thrill seeking when you have kids and everything else like that. So I get where he's coming from. But with that said, are we saying that people who go skydiving deserve to die? No, it's an accident. If somebody dies while skydiving, they're thrill seeking. Yeah, but some people need to thrill seek. It's just what they do now.
Especially if you retire from baseball and you miss, you know, the people get thrills in different kind of ways. Imagine being a hero and then being just a person.
But we won't talk about the type of people who should thrill seek and who shouldn't. I'm just talking thrill seeking in general. People are, they're born to get their heart rates up. Now, without knowing what happened in the crash, because we still don't really know. I mean, all the video showed was like 8 to 10 seconds of his plane spiraling down and just hitting the water. So, for all we know, he had a heart attack before he hit the water. And
couldn't even watch it.
The plane just went down and he hit the water, had a heart attack. Just because he's flying a plane doesn't mean that he was a scumbag or he deserved to die or anything like that. It's the same thing to me now when I think about it is parachuting. So let's say he was thrill seeking by going in, flying his own airplane or flying it low or whatever you want to say. And this is all speculation, by the way, because we don't know. So let's say he was flying it low. It's the same thing as somebody going skydiving and their parachute not opening and then hitting the ground. Or a gust of wind blowing them to the side, throwing them into a spin, and they hit the ground and die. They don't deserve to die because they went skydiving.
Right. And no one, and look, this is what you have to understand, and I think, you know, clearly, Roy Halladay did not deserve to die, obviously. And everyone that has a brain, right, can say that. And Felger said as much, you know, today when he, you know, whatever the hell he did, apologized or whatever. Mm-hmm. But my point is, and what I look at it is that, you know, he wasn't just flying his plane. He was up and down and up and down. I mean, there's a report from someone who was there, witnessed it, and said, you know, this guy was, you know, he's climbing up to about 100 and then dropping down to about 5 or 10 and then climbing back up to 100 and then dropping down. And it's like, you know, at a certain point, like, you're 5 feet off the water. Like, if one little thing happens, that's it. Like, you're done, you know? And so, like, you know, there's a risk that you take on, that you understand that there's a risk. When I get in this
plane, absolutely,
there's a risk, and you have to accept that risk. And so I think, you know, when you get in a plane and say, okay, there's a risk that I have to accept, that's fine. But he's not a show pilot. He's not a pilot for, you know, he may have his pilot license, but, you know, that doesn't mean he's professionally trained on all this stuff. He just got this plane.
He was like tweeting about it last week. Yeah.
So it was like, you know, he doesn't have a ton of experience with it. He doesn't know how it's going to respond, you know, if it hits a gust of wind, or what he should do if it hits a gust of wind. He's 5 feet off the ground, for God's sakes.
Yes, you are absolutely correct.
And so,
no,
like,
it was reckless, but like that right. doesn't mean, A, that doesn't mean, first of all, duh, it doesn't mean he deserves to die. Like right. that's, I mean, you,
right.
you could die from walking out of your house and like, you know, getting hit by, God forbid, getting hit by a car on your street. Like right. you, like people accept the inherent risk of being alive every single day. Does it like, it doesn't like him being reckless doesn't mean he deserved to die. And it definitely doesn't mean that he deserves an idiot on the radio, you know, like, demeaning him and calling him a moron. Like, it's just in such poor taste. Like, poor taste doesn't even begin to cover the way that he was spoken about for doing something like, you know, I've gone 100 miles per hour on the highway on the Cape before. Does that mean that if I die, Joe gets to call me a moron? No, like it means that I, you know, did what most people do and they try and like feel something in their life. That, you know, right, you want those moments that make your heart rate.
That's what I was saying with the thrill seeking thing. You're never closer, or you're never more alive than when you're closer to death, I guess is a good way to put it. But
yeah,
do I think that he should be scrutinized? Maybe a little bit. I mean, what he did, he probably shouldn't have been doing. But different from the Jose Fernandez case, it's, we don't know, as far as we know anyway, that he wasn't
yet.
He wasn't snorting coke before it happened.
Right.
He wasn't shit faced.
Don't even speculate yet. You're going to give people the wrong idea.
Well, that's what he's saying. He's saying, we assume that he wasn't, but we don't know for sure, but we assume that he wasn't.
Exactly. So with Fernandez, yeah, it was stupid. It was stupid, and he is solely responsible for what happened.
Right.
He would not have done what he did if he was sober and not acting in a reckless
manner.
And
he also made the choice to not be sober.
Right.
So
correct. So
you know.
What I'm saying is, again, if I'm driving at over 100 miles an hour in a place where it's not safe and I crash my car, that was stupid. And people have the right to call me stupid for doing that.
There's also a time and place to call you stupid, though. Like, the minute after your crash, when you're, like, in the ambulance.
Right. Now,
or, you know, if you're, like, if you've been dead for less than 24 hours and your poor widow and your young children are, like, you know, like, hearing stuff about you, you know, it could have been, like, if the autopsy came out and, you know, it said that he was doing drugs or something like that, then there's a time when you can say, okay, like, if you were, you know, Jose Fernandez and you're drugged out driving a boat, fine. But the day after your death, when they don't even know your like exact cause of death or anything yet, and the guy's just out there talking like a complete asshole, I just don't think that's okay.
Well, and
like, there's a time and place to pay tribute, and there's a time and place to be like, maybe you shouldn't do drugs and drive a boat.
I do agree with you, but I also think, you know, from a certain perspective, I can understand where you come out and say, look, it was sad that he died. It was awful that he died. You don't know what he wanted him to die, and no one deserves to die. However, when you do stuff like that, you have an inherent risk that's there, and you accept that risk. And the risk increases when you do things that are thrill-seeking, like going up and down, being 5 feet away from the water, maybe not being super experienced, doing all sorts of different things. And when you do those things, you're accepting more of a risk than is necessary. And so, you know, if that's what you do, then you accept that risk and you go from there. And I don't think he deserves to be called an idiot or stupid or anything like that. But at the same time, those are the things he did, and that's the way it goes, you know. So anyways, let's get off of this, because we've talked about it a lot. People in the media have talked about it a lot. We have a few blogs on WTP about it. If you want to read more about it, go on to WTPsports.com. You can read more about it. I think, Gabrielle, you posted something, right? You posted something, and then someone else has posted something tomorrow.
For for holiday or for?
Yeah, for holiday.
Because I did both.
Oh, okay.
Well, I am interested to see if anybody does have a realistic view of the situation that they want to put out at some point.
Yeah.
A realistic what, for Felger?
No, of the holiday situation.
We don't know enough yet to put something out.
Well, no, I know that's what
tomorrow,
I'm saying.
Garland's got something tomorrow, which kind of touches a little bit more on this, and it's like, you know, a little bit more towards this conversation. But
I think, first of all, I think Felger was playing devil's advocate so hard that it just, like, he plays the villain. He likes playing the villain.
Right. Yeah, but here's the thing. You like playing a villain. I like bitching at you. That doesn't mean that when someone dies, I don't know how to, conduct myself with decorum.
Right.
There's a difference between him, you know, saying things that make people uncomfortable and saying things that make people riot in the streets, you know?
Well, he clearly crossed the line. Again, I don't think he should be fired for it, but he clearly crossed the line. And he said he knew he was doing that, but he didn't realize to the extent that he was doing it, and he just sounded like a total asshole. And you know, and so, yeah. Anyways, good for him for semi-admitting it, even though he didn't totally admit it. He definitely sounded like an asshole. He sounds like an asshole a lot. But
yeah, I was going to say, it's not like a departure. It's just like,
even,
you know,
more so.
An amped up version of his usual behavior.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, so let's get into, I want to bust through, we're running late, but I don't care. I want to bust through some Patriots and some Celtics just quickly. First off, we have Marty B's back,
woo!
Which is pretty awesome. Pretty
and
excited about that.
Still going to be his number, so we're good on the yeah, yeah.
There you go. I mean, I just think it gives another weapon. Really, you know, for the Patriots at least, they need that. They need more weapons on offense.
If he's
Hogan's
healthy.
Not coming back this week. If he's healthy, right?
He wasn't going to play Week 10 anyway.
That's true, but the Patriots could activate him. Who the hell knows? So who knows what's going to happen? So I doubt he'll play against Denver, but he might play against Oakland. So
if Brady's happy that he's back, that's really all that matters in the long run. I mean,
right? No, it's true. I think more important than Marty is the defense. I think we'll have to see how the defense responds long term. I think it's going to be interesting. You know, they played well against Tampa, and they've played pretty well these last two games. These last two games, Gilmore wasn't on the field. So now Gilmore's coming back into the fold. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with Gilmore back in there, see how the defense continues to play. I'm hoping that they continue to play the way they've been playing, and Gilmore played the way he played against Tampa as opposed to the way he did the first three games of the season. But, you know, you don't know what's going to happen, of course. Who knows? But I just think that, you know, that's going to be more important than the offense. The offense is going to score points. In 2006, They almost made the Super Bowl with Jabbar Gaffney as their number one wide receiver. Not Jabbar Gaffney, Rishay Caldwell as their number one wide receiver. Like, they could do it. I'm not worried about that. So, like, yes, getting Bennett back helps offensively. But realistically, it's really the defense that I'm more concerned about than the offense. And so that's the biggest thing for me is how is the defense going to play and how is Gilmore going to come in? So we'll see. That's my number one takeaway, at least. And then they have five out of the next six are on the road. So they're in Denver on Sunday night. Then they go to Mexico City the next Sunday in Oakland. Against Oakland. I would assume
maybe I should go to that.
Don't do that. Have you ever seen that stadium? They got like fences.
I've never been to a football game. Ever. Well,
go to a Chargers game where there's no one around and you can kind of.
I'm going to Thanksgiving weekend at home.
Are you? There you go. Nice.
Yeah, me and my dad. My first football game ever. He's so excited.
Wait, is that the Patriots game you're going to? Mm-hmm. Oh, you'll have to meet up with me because I'll be there. Obviously, I'm there at every game.
Yeah, my dad's good friends with Bob Kraft. So.
Oh yeah, that's right. You guys suck. Are you sitting in Kraft? Are you sitting with Kraft? No, not with Kraft, but are you sitting like near Kraft? Or you just get
I don't ready? Know. I mean, when he asked me when I told him I wanted to go, first of all, he was like, I'm sorry, what now? You know this isn't a Red Sox game. And I was like, thank you. I'm not that stupid. he's like, are you saying you want me to buy seats or you want me to ask Bob for seats? And I was like, well, I don't like cold weather and I just moved to California where there is no cold weather. So you do with that what you will. So hopefully I'm hoping for some good stuff because my dad's gone to the Super Bowl with Bob before. And
Yeah, I would imagine. I would imagine you'll be in the Bucs. So, well, you can
he's a great guy. Bob's really nice.
You can come around and slum it with the
we can WTP Snapchat together
with the everyday people at our tailgate if you'd like, or you can just invite me to the important people's tailgate. That'd be fine too. Either way, yeah. So
important people don't tailgate, Pat. You know this.
I know, but you know what I mean.
My dad's from Minnesota. He likes a good tailgate.
Oh, see, there you go. You can come by and hang out, and then I can woo him, and he can take me to the Super Bowl instead of Joe. So, but
I don't think you have a chance of that. My dad really likes Joe.
It's probably not going to happen. But I'm a pretty likable guy.
My dad's going to leave me at home and take Joe to the Super Bowl without me.
And me. So he'll take me instead of you. That's what will happen.
The joke's on him because he doesn't know that Joe only wants to go to meet Kenny Chesney.
So I know. See, that's the thing.
My dad does not listen to Kenny Chesney.
So, but anyways, so yes. So the next five out of six are on the road. So like I said, they're in Denver this week. Oakland the next week in Mexico, home for Miami, and then the tough stretch really comes next where it's in Buffalo, in Miami on Monday night, and then a short week in Pittsburgh. And that's going to be the toughest game of the season is in Pittsburgh. That's going to be the toughest one. I think they play like shit in Denver and they play like shit in Miami. So those two games I'm worried about too.
Even I know that.
And Denver's freaking terrible this year.
I knew that they play like shit.
See, look at you. Look at you go. Yeah. So, but
I've been reading Football for Dummies.
Yeah, see? So, and it says in there, the Patriots feel like shit in Denver. So,
yeah, but it also doesn't have Bill Belichick on the in the chapter about greatest coaches of all time. So clearly the book is wrong.
Or right? Ridiculously old.
Nope. It's like the fifth edition. Came out like a year ago.
And they don't have Bill Belichick.
I sent you this Snapchat. It's literally like the top 10 coaches of all time, and I just captioned it, you spelled Bill Belichick wrong like 10 times. He's not on the list.
It just wants the number one.
Must be written by a Jets fan. But anyways.
Anybody else.
So we'll see. So five out of the next six on the road. It's going to be tough. So, but.
I'm trying to figure out. Maybe I'll swing down to the Miami game or the Pittsburgh game.
That would be sick. That would be really cool.
You're not invited.
Flying down to Miami.
And fly down to Miami for like a day and go to the game.
That's what my dad did for the Jacksonville in 2005. He and my mom went for like 20 hours.
Oh, yeah, I know. Just keep rubbing it in. Just keep rubbing it in.
I went to school.
I don't give a shit if you went or not. It doesn't matter, dude.
I was 11. I didn't do anything. So?
You were 11.
They showed up like as I was leaving for school the next morning with like their like all their swag, and they were like, "Good morning, we're going to bed. Pat's won." And like went.
You were so young; it's crazy. I was a junior in high school, junior in college. I mean, anyways,
You aged yourself there, Pat.
I know, but that's okay. That's the Patriots. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, I think there's no one in the AFC. I mean, they had the freaking bye week and they won. Like, they didn't even play and they won. The freaking Chiefs lost.
That's so like now, the most Patriots thing that anyone's ever said,
right?
Too,
they
like,
win the bye week every freaking year. It's ridiculous. The Chiefs lost, so now they have three losses. So the Patriots control their destiny for the number one seed. The Bills, who are right behind them in the division, they lost. The Dolphins, who were pretty close behind them in the division, they lost. So it's like every team that was even close to the Patriots lost, and now it's just them in Pittsburgh. And if they beat Pittsburgh when they play them, they're the number one seed in the AFC. They get home field advantage throughout, and they're marching into the Super Bowl, and where they'll probably meet either the Eagles or the Rams. So it'll be interesting. See what happens. It could be a rematch. Could be a rematch of 05.
Yeah,
it could
Eagles.
Be a rematch of 01. Who the hell knows? You know. So it's gonna be interesting. So we'll see what happens. I mean, yeah, Patriots got to get there first, but we'll see. So
I could do with an 05 rematch. That'd
right?
be funny. My yeah. You don't know this, Pat, but my dad's a rabbi. Shout out to my dad. Actually, it's his birthday today. He turned 60. It's past midnight on the East Coast, so he's 60.
Happy birthday, David.
Yeah, happy birthday, Dad. So my dad's best friend is also a rabbi, also named David, and they made a bet the summer, 04 summer, that the Pats and the Eagles would face each other in the Super Bowl, and the Pats would win.
What?
And my dad, and so then the other, yeah, they made this bet like 8 months before. And the bet was like something like you buy like the whole family a chocolate milkshake because we're like one big family with them. He gets up at his best friend's son's bar mitzvah like the next week and he's like, Josh, you owe me a milkshake. In front of like a congregation of like 500 people, he's like, the Eagles suck and you owe me a chocolate milkshake. So I would love, from a family standpoint,
that's
I would
awesome.
Love a round two of that because that story has been passed around in my family for years.
That's
that
wild.
Was like the most memorable thing of my dad like rabbi shaming someone at synagogue at a bar mitzvah for the Patriots winning the Super Bowl.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. So yeah, so we'll see. That'd be pretty cool.
That'd be cool.
So I mean, certainly looking that way, the Eagles are the best team in the league right now, and it's really not close.
Yeah,
so,
Joe, who do you want us to see in the Super Bowl when we go?
Don't let us wake you there, Joe.
Whoever's going to lose, that's who I want to see.
Yeah.
Literally anybody. I'm not worried. Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
said it from day one. Say it again. Pats, Super Bowl.
Happened. Yes, right. You did say that. But you also said they were going to be undefeated this season. So
without Julian Edelman.
I did say that as well. But that's
I miss Jimmy Garoppolo. That's the only reason I wanted to go to the Super Bowl.
You know what? I miss Jimmy Garoppolo's dimples. But beyond that, I don't miss much about Jimmy Garoppolo.
You're not a woman, Pat.
He was
Women miss Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, well, you can watch the San Francisco games. Like, it's not like you were close.
I'm not gonna watch. I didn't even – this is the first year I actually, like, actively watch Patriots games.
But he was never even on the team. Like, when would you have even seen him? Like, he's just on the sideline. Like, you wouldn't see him unless you went to practice or you were sat at the game behind the bench. Like,
or you were
going
to go to the Super Bowl and the only reason you wanted to go was so you could hug Jimmy Garoppolo.
Oh, come on. You weren't going to – you know what? I shook hands with Jimmy this summer. How about that? Oh, awesome. Yeah. That's
we're,
right. I'll shove that right in your face. And
we're
gonna, my girls
got I hung out with Pedro Martinez twice this summer.
You know what? I don't give a shit about you, stupid Pedro Martinez. Jimmy Garoppolo signed my girls' shirts and then shook my hand. So, you know. Cool guy. Nice guy. You know. Anyways. Yes. Yeah, I know. I hate you guys. But that's nevertheless. All right. So we'll see. So we'll see what happens to the Patriots. Interesting rest of the year. I think they're going to the Super Bowl. You think they're going to the Super Bowl. We all think they're going to the Super Bowl.
We know they're going to the Super Bowl.
If they don't, then basically every year with the Patriots, if they don't go to the Super Bowl, it's, you know, it's a failure. They've been the AFC Championship game 57 years in a row. It's just, it's ridiculous. Think about it this way. Okay. There have been 51 Super Bowls played. Played. Okay. Tom Brady has played in 7 of them. 7 out of 51. For those of you not great at math, that's greater than 1/8. Okay. So that's like more than 12% of the Super Bowls that have been played.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is yet another way that baseball and football are just completely different animals because, you know, you've got teams that haven't even won a World Series in 57 years.
Right, right. It's just ridiculous, you know. So, anyways.
Shout out to the Indians.
No doubt. Mm. All right, so just very, very quickly on the Celtics, like super quick on the Celtics, 10-game winning streak, best team in the NBA, at least record-wise, of course.
Kyrie
is just fucking stupid. He's just stupid. Oh. I mean, some of the shots he hit last night were just like, how did he just do that?
And you got LeBron all over Instagram like little bitch, which just makes it even sweeter,
with
too.
Arthur with the fist. It's just
three times. And then he tried to like change it by being like, oh, well, I'm just a really big fan of that TV show. Really Arthur. No, you're not. You're Arthur. A salty bitch.
Shut up, dude. Yeah, that's just LeBron being LeBron. So trying to draw attention to himself. Kyrie's been a monster. He's a leader in the – I mean, he's clearly a leader. He never even – I love how he's like Tom Brady in when he talks, because I don't think he's ever said a good word about himself ever. It's everything
is
just –
No, he just thinks the earth is flat.
Well, he doesn't. Well, he does. But he mm-hmm. said that he's kind of trolling, but who knows. But either way, he's never said a good word about himself. It's always, the guys doing – the team did this. The team did that. The team – I mean – shit, he had a 5-point play the other night. And they're like, oh, what about that 5-point play? That was pretty great. And he's like, well, yeah, it would have been great if I hit the damn free throw. But, you know, at least I got the rebound. Like, that's just what he does. Like, they won the game last night. And he played great in the fourth quarter. And then he's walking. Like, you know, I shot like crap tonight. But thankfully, we had other guys step up. We were missing Horford. Like, he's always criticizing himself. He's never putting himself up. And he's always bringing the team up. And, no, so I think for me, it's great. I love the way Kyrie's playing. I'm concerned, however, about the injuries. The injuries are stacking up. You have Tatum, who knows how long he's going to be out for. Horford with another concussion. He missed 9 games last year with a concussion. So we'll see. I like Tyson. I like Baines a lot. But realistically, if you're asking them to play big minutes over a long period of time, you know, I don't know how that's going to work out. But, you know, we'll see. So, anyways, that's our quick Celtics minute. Anything you want to add, either of you?
No, my computer's about to die. So,
nope,
that's something.
All right. Well, okay. So maybe we can kiss Joe goodbye. That's all right. So, but not literally kiss Joe goodbye because that would be weird. But anyways, So I think that's pretty much it. That's all we have. Oh, one thing I wanted to mention: today's show is brought to you by RotoSurance. So roadassurance.com, they're insuring your fantasy football teams. It's the absolute best deal on planet Earth, I think, if you're a fantasy football player. I insured a player on fantasy football. I'm playing fantasy football for free this year because of Roadassurance. They insure fantasy football. They insure baseball. They insure hockey or basketball. Right now, obviously, only hockey, basketball, and football going on. And they also just started doing daily fantasy sports. So if you do daily fantasy sports like FanDuel – okay, if you do something like that, then, you know, you can insure the players that you draft, and if they get hurt during the game, you get your money back. Absolutely cannot beat it. The best deal in sports. If you give the promo code WWP, that's capital W, capital W, capital P, you get 20% off your total purchase when you buy from RotoAssurance. Best deal out there, 100%. So, anyways, I got two quick This Week in Sports Histories. First one is November 10th, 1991. Bernie Kosar throws an interception. Now, normally that wouldn't be big news, but at that point, he had an NFL record 308 passes without throwing an interception. Was an NFL record. Is no longer an NFL record. I'm just going to give you one guess as to who holds that NFL record right now.
Brock Osweiler.
That would be incorrect. You wasted your first goddamn guess on Brock Osweiler. Are you shitting me? No. Gabrielle, you want to take a guess?
I got distracted, so no.
You don't. Okay. I'm talking about passes thrown without an interception, consecutive passes thrown without an interception. Yeah,
and you Joe want me to? Here, I'm sorry. You want me to guess?
Yes, I'd like you to guess. You only need to know one name, Gabrielle.
Tom Brady.
Hey-oh, there you go. Like, come on. So Tom Brady's record is 335. He set that in 2011. So obviously, clearly, Tom Brady holds that record.
Did I just get something right about football that Joe didn't get right?
All right, obviously. Come on now. Come on. If you actually – all right, I'll let you have it. Fine.
So
guys, this is actually a really big moment for us, okay?
For someone who's incredibly smart, you're not very good at picking things.
That's true. But that's okay. It was a joke. The Brock Osweiler one was a joke. But anyways, nevertheless – So, the question was, I always assume Tom Brady. That's all you got
to
assume. You don't have to even think about it. You just assume.
It's a good t-shirt, Joe. Yeah. Always assume Tom Brady.
When in doubt, guess Tom Brady. So, anyways, what's that? Isn't that like a beer one or like alcohol one where it's like doesn't matter what the question is, alcohol is always the answer or something like that?
I think that's alcoholism.
It's not the question; it's the answer.
Yeah, something like that. Okay, mm-hmm. So that's Tom Brady. So anyways, November 11th, 1990, it was the quote-unquote body bag game. So the body bag game is Eagles coach Buddy Ryan threatened beating the Redskins so badly that they would, quote, have to be carted off and body bagged. Like literally what he said before the game. The Eagles defense ended up scoring 3 touchdowns, and they won 28-14. And, oh, by the way, during the game, 8 Redskins were knocked out of the game with injuries. Kind of held true to form there. So, but anyway, so that was just interesting. So that's our This Week in Sports History.
Love it.
Great, right? So anyway, I just wanted to send a few quick shout-outs. First of all, thank you two for both for coming on. Appreciate it. It was kind of last-minute notice, but a lot of fun. Having the prez and the editor-in-chief on is pretty cool. So you can check us out at WTP Sports on Twitter. Please check us out. It's a great website, WTPSports.com. Again, at WTP Scotch is Joe, and at GF Star 1. And, of course, that's the double R for the star, man. If you're a real star, you get the double R. That's Gabrielle. And we are at Weekend War Pod. No E's. So it's at WKNDWARPOD. That's Twitter. And then the email is the same at gmail.com. So it's Weekend War Pod, no E's. So WKNDWARPOD at gmail.com. Also want to send a shout out to M.Dot and Core for the outro music. M.Dot is on Twitter and Instagram at MDOT Boston. He's also on iTunes and Spotify. You want to check him out. And Core is at Core of EMS, and the Core is with a K. So it's K-O-R-E of EMS. So they do the outro music, so we appreciate them. Go on iTunes, give us a rate, give us a follow, subscribe, download, unsubscribe, re-download, subscribe again, unsubscribe, then resubscribe, then do it a few times. Okay, and then send us a 5-star shout-out, and we'll send you some free shit. So that hopefully Joe will give us for free. I mean, I don't know if that'll happen or not. But even if he doesn't, we'll pay for it. I don't even give a shit.
Just ask, Pat.
So so listen, shoot us a tweet or send us an email. Or perhaps you'll tell us some stories. Okay, you'll tell us a story about how you once were in a barbershop quartet in Skokie, Illinois. Or maybe you'll tell us a story about Redfoot from California. Or you'll tell us about this really fat, like orca fat guy that you met one time, or how you used to pick beans in Guatemala, or maybe you'll talk about your lawyer Kobayashi. But either way, whether you're Verbal Kint or Kaiser Soze, we'll listen to your stories, we'll tell your stories. We appreciate you and we love you. So thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
That was good.
Mike, 'cause we here all night, no time to stall, right? 2 seconds left. clutch shot, it's go time. Nickels on the old line, watch the losers go wild.
Turn me up on that radio dial. It's been a while since I played, but I'm here with a smile. I'm taking jump shots, get them in, and I'm out. I'm breaking records like Bill Russell. Kid has got muscle. Being polite when I'm batting this mic. You see the city of champs coming to victory dance, buddy. It's radio talk, so turn it up when it's on. We're gonna listen and rock to what it is that you want. Warriors,
you'll need to tune in. This is the show.